A Saturday.
The opening to this episode description, it writes itself.
It
It
really
it's
does.
I mean it's I guess what I did on for Thursday.
Yeah. Honestly, when you weren't showing up when I was trying to launch the Zoom meeting, all I could think is, well, the next available day I have is Tuesday, so I guess that would be perfect.
No, we've already established that is not smart to do.
Well, this is already not smart to do. We're
Yeah.
recording on a Saturday. We're doomed. This is going to be a horrible episode.
Well, we'll see. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. All right, I'm ready to go. I'll put it this way: I'm as ready as I'm ever gonna be.
When are we not? Welcome.
Welcome.
How's it going, everybody? I'm Rob.
Oh, we're introducing our that I guess I'm Colton. Is that what we
Yes.
do now? Do we introduce ourselves at the beginning of each episode?
Why not?
Should we say the name of the episode too? Or the this is Know Your Rights.
Know your rights. Yes. We're on episode 57. If you're not aware by now, we got you.
Yeah, and also, I guess we did do this last episode too, where we actually introduced ourselves. I don't know if people have at this long of a time, if you've been listening and you didn't know us personally, if you knew who was who.
I'm not gonna lie. I feel like we cover it in the theme. We
Yeah.
have our inter, yeah. But you know what? Screw it. Again, that's Colton. I'm Rob.
Or, yeah, that's right.
Or
The
yeah. Told you it's a Saturday. This is gonna be a terrible episode, but it's gonna be fun.
So we are we're diving into have we decided what to call these single song episodes?
I'm still just going with what was it? The song spotlight.
The song spotlight. Here we go. Song spotlight, everybody.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. That's my little.
We should come up with like a little jingle for.
We should. There's a lot of things that we should do.
The only difficulty is we're not sure if we shouldn't. So it
It
makes
gets
it very
tricky.
complicated. Yeah.
Well, for today's song spotlight, of course, this was Rob's choice. He chose the Moody Blues, and it is we'll address this in the second segment today, but Tuesday Afternoon is the title of the song.
That's what I'm rolling with.
All right. I love it, man. Well, we've been both listening to it for the last really 4 weeks at this point.
For me, I would say like 35 years.
Yeah. And me one time 2 weeks ago, and then six more times in the last 2 hours.
I did like in the last episode where I'm like, have you listened? And you're like, do not ask me that question.
That's offense. How dare you,
My
sir?
bad, my bad.
I think we have a few things to address in this first segment
Yeah, we do.
before we dive into it. And I want to keep it light. I want to
Yes.
keep it funny. I don't know how to do those things
It's
necessarily,
nothing
but
is funny about this.
yeah, sports are awful as
It's
an
awful.
idea.
Yeah.
They're bad. And if you're like, what are they doing? Of course, we have to a little gotta do a little sports talk. Too many things have
Sports talk.
happened.
Yeah.
So, first of all, this was on, was it Wednesday at this
I
point?
try to forget, but I think it was Wednesday.
Wednesday or Thursday. The Los Angeles Lakers have been eliminated 4-1. That's the thing. I was not expecting it to be that non-competitive.
You know what really sucks is every Lakers fan, there was this big thing going on 710. I listened to 710 ESPN radio, and every sports fan was calling in doing their little, I don't know if limerick's the right term, but it's just like Minnesota, bad Toyota,
Oh,
Yoshinoba, Lakers in five,
yeah.
fucking Wolves in five.
Wolves and
That's
five. Anthony
heartbreak.
Edwards.
He's so good.
This is like a weird thing to air out in public. I don't appreciate his like demeanor necessarily.
I think I hate it because he's got that arrogance that he can back up. I'm okay with arrogance when they suck, but he's really good.
I just felt like his in that there's a really cool Olympic documentary on Netflix, Court of Gold, I think it was. It was amazing. Like those kinds of things make me think, God, if they just got rid of live sports and they just like did whole seasons in long documentary series like that, if it was that well done, that would be kind of cool. I don't know, but it was so great. The only reason I bring it up is on the USA team, there's a lot of guys who I don't really follow as well, like Bam Adebayo, who in that documentary, he just seems like such a cool dude.
He's wonderful. I love that
And
guy.
yeah,
Play,
just
plays for the Heat, but that's okay.
yeah. And I think historically, all I've heard of him has been like less than stellar things. And so just seeing him like actually in the documentary, I'm like, just what a cool guy. Anthony Edwards comes across as like kind of an idiot a little bit. I don't know. This is weird even saying that. I want Edwards to come for me
I don't give a shit, Anthony
and not
Edwards.
nice.
I think you're an idiot.
Great.
I fucking hate you, dude.
Now he's coming for us. This isn't great. But I'm sorry, man. I'm wearing my purple in part.
I appreciate it. I was thinking about throwing on a Lakers thing, but I was like, it just hurts.
And also totally by accident at the same time that I'm wearing this
That
purple.
is funny.
It is a tough thing. And then last night, the Warriors, who's the basketball team that I support, lost a game they should have won for several reasons and are now going to game seven.
I was gonna say 3-3, man. That's the Rockets are second seed. The Warriors should absolutely win. But I mean, we discussed this. We've discussed this millions of times over our friendship. Most of the time, the season ends in heartbreak. You know, that's just the plight of being a sports fan. If you really dedicate it, and you and I dedicate probably too much time.
I think listeners of this music songwriting
Yeah,
podcast would agree with
I know.
that.
It's like nothing from all of our songs have nothing to do from trauma in our past outside of sports.
I have several times now tried to write songs about sports. There is a song I am still working on for the last, I'm saying like 10 years I've been working on it. I don't even know if that works out time-wise. It doesn't. Less than 10. But on I want to say it's game six of the National League Championship Series. Maybe it was 2015 when or 16 when Clayton Kershaw started game six in Chicago and the Cubs beat them and eliminated the Dodgers. That game broke my heart, and I've been wanting to write a song about it for a very long time, and it is very difficult to do.
I'm not gonna lie, like all of my sports sorrow, I feel one of the greatest pitchers of all time, but Kershaw is like the physical embodiment of my sports trauma.
He is one of the best folk heroes of like sports and baseball, however you want to put it, because it is constant greatness met with tragedy. And I think it is, and also just the way that he takes that. This is not me kind of like just trying to defend a guy I really do appreciate. I'm looking at his bobblehead right now, holding his championship ring. I think there's a lot of grace in how he handled
I agree.
just how poorly those playoff things have gone. I'm of the opinion that I find those kinds of things more interesting and compelling than just constant greatness. I think NBA is really, I do, I get bored by that.
Yeah,
Like,
whatever you got to tell yourself, buddy.
I'm telling you the truth. I don't think people believe me, but it's also, I find those personalities less than stellar, anyways. It's like the Michael Jordan thing where I think people really want to find interesting, like compelling things and like just constant sustained greatness. And it's like, I'm sorry to say this, buddy, it's the Mamba mindset. It's like the Jordan, like just do it. I find that stuff boring.
Well,
Boring as all
if
hell.
you find that boring, Kobe's had plenty of heartbreak in basketball. Let's just go basketball specific.
Come on,
So
man. You can't
he,
just serve that up to
I
me.
know, I know, I know. But I can see what you're saying. But man, Kershaw, when he gave up those back-to-backers against the Nationals, and they just showed him sitting in the
Oh,
dugout.
it's like one of the more heartbreaking images of.
I feel like that's what happened either Wednesday or Thursday when the Lakers lost. I'm just like, I had an out of body experience and I was just looking at myself sitting in my own little personal dugout. It's like, yep, this is how it goes.
It's, you know, I think it is however people want to draw inspiration for the art they create. I think sports are a perfect thing of that. What I don't think is healthy is what we do, which is we tie our self-worth to what these millionaires do or do not do. I mean, Roki Sasaki is about to pitch in like 1 hour and 15 minutes. I am nervous for it. I feel like a parent. I feel like a father worried about how my child is going to do
You know,
in a
the
game.
worst part about being a big sports fan is interacting with people who don't give a shit about sports because they're absolutely right when they're like, oh, okay, so your team lost. And it's like, no, but you don't understand. I'm devastated. And they're like, why? So it's like, just kick rocks. All right, fine.
And also, what I want to know is, what do you do with your free time if you're not thinking? And like, I'm not saying that in like a, ooh, I want to do it too. I'm actually suspicious of you. Like, what is it you're getting up to? Where like one of the most readily available forms of entertainment in the world is right there, and you're just like, I'd rather not.
And it's
That's
real.
weird.
It's
Yeah,
arguably
it's like people
unscripted.
who. This is weird. This is not where I should be airing this grievance, but I gotta do it. What? Why do people still watch wrestling, man? What is it? Is it the? I know. That's why I'm
Yes.
asking you.
Yes, I do. I don't watch pro wrestling now, but I'm not gonna lie to you. Just the other day, I watched a Stone Cold Steve Austin documentary.
Oh, I to be I. That's my guy. Like when I was in elementary school, I was as into wrestling as I think anyone's been. I had all the little like figurines they got. Goldberg was my dude.
I hate Goldberg, but
Booker
that's fine.
T.
So
Stone
you were,
Cold was okay.
that sounds WCW. You were W,
I
I'm
was both,
WWE.
man. I did both. I didn't care.
All right, that's good. That's good.
Dude, I probably did watch more WCW though, on the whole,
You
but.
know what's that? Professional wrestling is a lot like music these days for me. Like if I try to watch modern pro wrestling, I go like, ah, it's not as good as the old stuff. You know?
Well, I mean, I'm so out of that. What I am kind of bewildered by is when you're younger, the illusion, the most amazing illusion of wrestling is the authenticity, right? And there's athleticism, like I get that, and there's performance, and that is cool. But it's like what I've seen from a distance is how insane the fever of like discussing this thing as if it's real, which to me is. It's crazy bananas. It's scripted. It's a soap opera, and that's great.
Yeah, see, I've always just kind of I've dissected stuff from like, oh, that's poor storytelling when it comes to pro wrestling. I was never just like, oh,
But when you were little, you
when
weren't
I
saying that's poor storytelling.
I didn't articulate it that way, but I was never under it was Santa Claus or I'm like, I know Santa ain't real, but I still want this gift.
Well, yeah, I can get that. Maybe I was a little more naive, but I think I like you said, I had rumblings of it. I just remember going to the Antelope Valley Fair, not during the fair, but it was like during an off season, and they had one of those like independent wrestling leagues like come around.
That's
And that's one of the more fun nights I remember as a
I
kid.
bet I've never gone and seen a live pro wrestling event. I bet that would be fun.
That is, and I'm not, it's like in a small room, right? There's like little like metal folding chairs everyone was sitting in. There wasn't like a ton of people there.
Of course.
And those guys were great. And I remember, I think they had like kind of bigger names. They had, who's the clown from the actual wrestling game? He used to be in the WWF. Like he was,
And he was a clown.
yeah. I'm not gonna remember. Someone right now is screaming the name.
Yeah.
I just remember there was a Super Nintendo wrestling game where he was one of the wrestlers. Anyway, he was great. There was the Honky Tonk Man
Okay.
who was there, and he was like the what do you want to call? What do you call it? The heel,
The
right?
heel.
And he
Okay.
was so, I mean, the thing is, I remember going up with it was my sister's boyfriend at the time. He took me and two of my friends from school, which was made it all cooler, right? And we were like, oh, can we get a autograph? And the guy was like, get out of here. Like he was like a jerk. And
K-Fab.
I love it, man,
Yeah.
because he was so like, there's no reason for him to be so committed to instilling like hatred in a kid's heart, except he knew he wanted me to have a good time. And it's like in
Hell
the
yeah.
middle of a nothing town. It's just so
Fuck
cool.
yeah. I'm sure you had a bunch of grown men teaching you a whole bunch of new insults.
And then he gets like, you know, tapped out at the end by the good guys. And I'm coming home. I'm like floating. I'm like, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And he's like pointing at us like, I hate you. I don't know. Anyway, all is this to say the magic in childhood is real. And now it's dead.
And it's dead. Yes, that's exactly where I was going to take it. But you said you have a game.
I do have a game. I have all a game. Right. So usually at the end of the episode, whoever's turn it is to choose our next song spotlight or full artist discography will give the other person clues. Yeah. What I've thought about, and it's nothing to do with this song in particular, except I just think it'll be funny. I am going to, throughout the second segment of our episode, I'm going to try to drop in little hints to the song.
Oh, okay.
As we discuss. And I don't want you to call it out. If you can guess it,
if I
don't
do
want you
get
to
it,
call it out. Okay. Save it, and we'll talk about it later. But I'm going to be dropping little hints of the song, lyrics, right? Those kinds of things.
I get what you're saying. Almost like if I go like, oh, I think this song's really good, and you're like, nah, I don't know, don't go chasing waterfalls.
Exactly. Yes. Now, hopefully, and I have no means way of
Did
knowing.
Did I guess the song already?
Okay, we got to just start a new song. No, but I do think, I'm not sure if I'm going to do this correctly. We're going to try it. And everyone listening, we're going to try it together. Let's see. Yeah. But
it could be fun.
I had one other thing I wanted to ask you about before we get into that. And this is, it just feels, because we're a music-based podcast, neither of
every
us care about
then.
This that much every now and then. It feels like something we should maybe briefly discuss. Did you see the recent Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees?
I saw, so what was it? Soundgarden, Joe Cocker.
Chubby Checker,
Cyndi Lauper, right?
Bad Company,
Outkast. That's the one that I wanted to remember.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, the one I'm more interested in asking you about, although you can mention any if you want, is the White Stripes.
I did notice that.
Yeah, I don't know. In looking at that list, that is the most noticeable one where I'm like, why? And
Here's the thing. I think that eventually, sure, they've had enough of an impact on the rock music, for better or for worse. For the most part, most people I know, most of the musicians I know, it is for the worse.
Yeah.
But I was more upset that I'm like, Soundgarden and White Stripes at the same time. Think of how long ago Soundgarden is.
Yeah.
That's the thing where I'm like, no, you got to make the White Stripes wait a little bit longer.
I think that was the thing I was confused by, because even like Outkast had been around for a lot longer than, you know, like Stankonia and that. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I mean, we've had a brief discussion in the past about like hip hop artists inducted in. I think we're both in the similar page of like, it has nothing to do with like the artists themselves. It's a little confusing to kind of put them into what, I don't know, I guess it's like what the idea of rock and roll is.
Right? It's one of those things where it's, you call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it's the Music Hall of Fame. This is how it's functioning.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's maybe a category issue, maybe. But at this point, I think Outkast is a better fit than Jay-Z. Right?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't mind it.
Well, I mean, shit. If anybody can understand having a difficult time with categories, it's definitely Know Your Rights.
That's most definitely. When we get inducted into the music podcasts of Hall of Fame, and people go, but all the sports talk, will be like, you know what? We were just breaking boundaries from the very beginning. I don't have a problem with that. And also, I don't care about any of it. But the White Stripes feels like a very recent one. And it seems to me like the first example of like bands around our like teenage years. Like we always like talk about like the legacy, right? Of what some of these bands will be. And like getting to see some bands that we were around from like the creation to the end of, and kind of seeing in real time where they're going to fit in like the kind of larger music canon. Like, and we've done older artists more recently, right? And had that discussion with them. Is this what it's going to be? Are the White Stripes going to be this like, you know, American rock icon that people go back to?
It's up to the kids.
Hey, kids, knock it off.
Yeah, not them.
Stop
not
it. Them.
Choose somebody else.
Be smart. Can I? I'm going to say something really blatant here.
I like it.
The White Stripes suck, man. They're bad.
I'm not completely, I'm not there with you, but I'm not that far from you.
I'm willing to go more into why I think this, not now. This feels like not the space to do it, but on this music songwriting podcast, I'm going to do it on our sports podcast. I think that's better. No, but my whole thing with like Jack White, but like White Stripes specifically, it's so much more about the idea of them that I think people are into than listening to White Stripes songs. Like I'm trying to think of what, like Dead Leaves and Dirty
That's
Grass.
one of the first
Like,
ones. I think that song's good.
yeah, like there are some where I'm like,
Truth Doesn't Make a Noise is so damn good to me. I love that song.
I just overall, it's one of those, like, the form is more compelling than the product, that it's two people and that Megan White was this, like, really, like, hearing people defend Megan White's drumming to me is insane.
I mean, you don't want to watch Megan White and Lars Ulrich have a drum off.
It's insane to me.
I think what it really comes down to is most people who go the White Stripes suck. I'm like, that's not what you mean. You want to say Jack White sucks.
Well,
That's
he
what I think
does.
most people want to say, because I'm like, there are good songs by the White Stripes. It's just Jack White, he makes Bono look like a really cool guy.
I see. I don't know, man. I guess that's where we can look at any artist and pick out like things in the discography we think are good. I just think on the whole, the balance of the White Stripes, it's not. Like, as much as I also don't care about how music that we listen to and love gets remembered by other people, I also am like worried for how we consider this down the line. Anywho,
It's
it.
inevitably there's gonna be a reputation of legend. It's
The best way I can put it now that I've had a little more time to think of it is the White Stripes getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. To me, it's just because they're the kind of band from like their very conception, that's what they wanted. They wanted specifically like everything in like Jack White's songwriting, that like neo classic rock in such a like generic, bland way. Even like the lyric writing in that, which is so like kind of caveman meets like Stooges meets just like
There's a little bit of wordplay
it's.
also.
It's forced in a way that always felt really inauthentic to me. And I'm like, you know what? That makes tons of sense. It's like the person who really wants to be prom queen or king and does all the really annoying things to get it.
You're
And
I
then they
think
get
that's
it.
perfect.
And then you go, good for you. What a dumb thing to want. And you did it in the worst way. And you got what you wanted.
Class president Jack White. I'm with
Exactly.
you. Well, Colton, we're both wrong. You do know that they have four Grammys.
Well, there you go. Shoot. I always screw up. I forget about how great Grammys are. Man.
If that doesn't tell you they're great, nothing will, Colton.
Do the Moody Blues have any Grammys?
Let's find out.
Let's find out right now.
Cootie
Nope,
Blues.
they never won a Grammy.
Hey, you guys are the best.
Are they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
They gotta be. They gotta be. I'm gonna be more pissed off about the White Stripes if the Moody Blues aren't in there.
They were inducted in 2018.
Amen. All right.
I'm tempted to look up who they were
Because that
inducted
matters.
alongside. Yeah, I feel like we're both like, doesn't matter. And yet we go,
You can't
oh,
help it, dude.
it is.
It's
Well,
pro wrestling.
isn't it all pro wrestling? Wow.
It is.
This was a great first segment. We did a good job.
I enjoyed it.
For now on, at the end of each segment, let's just rate ourselves out of five.
All right.
How would you rate this segment?
Am I rating you or rating me?
Let's
Or is it
do
both of us?
our we are a pair. We're a duo.
As a
Rate
team?
the duo.
I'm going to go a 1.1.
Okay, moving on, everybody. We're gonna hear from what our real life podcasts that are still airing at this point. Both of them are Blamley, Blaise Blown, Blaise Bone.
We're going to hear from good podcasts right now.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball and Entertainment podcast.
And welcome back, everybody. We are back to discuss the Moody Blues. And I think this is very quickly lay out the issue with the name here, because people may be confused if they hear this and go, well, isn't this called The Afternoon?
On the album, it's called The Afternoon. And then in parentheses, sometimes it's Tuesday, question mark.
When you say sometimes, it's like when it gets brought up or on, even in the album liner.
I let me see what my vinyl
has. I've seen that cover. It's a beautiful cover.
Yeah, it is. Let's see. Yeah, and here I have it as just The Afternoon. And then it says Forever Afternoon, parentheses, Tuesday. What the fuck?
Wait, it says The Afternoon and then parentheses Forever Afternoon. And then in the same parenthesis, it says Tuesday with a question mark?
No, it has The Afternoon. So it has basically side one. Or it has all the tracks as The Day Begins, Dawn, Morning, Lunch Break, The Afternoon, Evening, The Night. But then it has, what is it called? I can't think of it right now. The two dots.
Mm-hmm. The ellipses?
No, not ellipses. The two dots on top of each other. What is that called?
A colon?
A colon, thank you.
Yeah.
So it has Dawn. Dawn is a feeling, which is the actual title of the damn thing. The morning. Another morning. Lunch break. Peak hour. Even for The Night, it's Nights in White Satin after that. So I don't know. It's a concept that they got a little too carried away with, which I can't fault them too much because I am so guilty of doing that.
Yeah. He or she who is not without the sin of weird song titles and album concepts.
Throw a stone at us at no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
I'm remembering all of our geography-based titles.
Oh, God. So bad. I got way too carried away there. We had an album, everybody, called Cosmopolitan, where I was determined to include every freaking continent on our Mother Earth.
But also songs like Bethlehem, D.C., which I love that song title.
I actually like the song title. I like the song. But I also had, what was it, South Central America. Yeah.
Another great song. And I'm like always tempted to be like, good title. And then I think longer than 5 seconds and I go, oh man.
No, it's bad. It's bad. Yeah. I should have thought longer than 5 seconds before titling it then.
So thank you for that clarity. Let's table the confusion of the title. We know for us it is Tuesday afternoon.
Hell yeah, it's Tuesday afternoon.
Tell me more about this song. Why did you choose it?
First favorite song. I remember being a little kid. It's kind of the perfect spring cleaning song. You know, just cleaning around the house, dancing like Stevie Nicks with, I don't know, a dress. This is what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But this was a song that just like I would be begging my parents to play over and over again. I'm pretty sure this is the song that made me learn how to put a record on. You know, how to pick up the needle, drop it to the spot, power up everything. We had a great, great vinyl collection when I was growing up and just like really nice stereo setup. But this was the first one that I loved it. And it was that little piano break that like bang, 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 bang. I fell in love immediately.
The first listening experience to this is the most thrilling, right? And not to say that the others after aren't, but it's like when you watch a film where there's some kind of like a big twist or just the way that the story unfolds, like listening to the song unfold the first time. And like for you, it was when you were a child. For me, yes. I was a 37-year-old man,
but you
at
know,
my
I,
desk. But
I was so this is what I wanted to ask you, because I haven't heard this song for the first time in a long time. So I was trying to get myself in that mind setting okay, how's this gonna strike Colton's ears? I do this with my own songs. Once a song's recorded, I try to listen to it like, okay, don't expect anything. Just try to listen like a listener hearing for the first time, which is impossible.
Yeah.
I actually had a question. What was the first thing that stood out to you? What was the first thing that like caught your ear when listening to this? It could be as simple as literally like the song starts and what's the first instrument that...
No, so I could go to later listenings and tell you, like, it's only in later listenings and after looking it up that I really started to appreciate the mellotron, right? That sort of trumpet mellotron at the beginning, which, and this is usually the case with me anyways, I don't immediately start breaking down instrumentation the first time I hear something. Like, and that's mainly if it's good, right? I'm not worried about it. If it's bad, I probably am, like already sick of the song and I'm looking for other things to focus on. But it really is... I think structural, right? The structure of the song is so interesting to me because it's not complex in that it's a series of repeating parts, right? And and yet it's the movement between those parts that's so cool to me. And like, I think like each individual part, so like that like kind of minor kind of finger picking like opening, right?
Yeah, that little A minor thing where it starts with that kind of thumping bass, that like doom, doom, boom, boom, boom.
And then it's even like from that into the strumming, right? Which is such, to me at least, I associate that with the 60s and like that like real, that jangly, like it really is more rhythmic, right? Like it's where you really start to hear like rhythm guitar and get it. And then like you said, like the moving into, you'll have to help me with the timing here. I think it's all 4/4, right? But it's like the key change and it's, is it like halftime? It's
I think there's a tempo adjustment there.
It feels like it. And it's funny to me that it doesn't, it's not a smooth transition.
No. It's what we've talked, it's the looseness of it all. And I think, what's his name? Justin, the front man for Moody Blues. It's Justin something. Justin, I got this, Justin Hayward. He talks about how it was just, when they recorded it, it was so pleasant and there wasn't too much, you know, critiquing. It was just kind of going in there and just laying it down, which it comes across in the recording. It has this loose, fine vibe, and it's perfect for the context of the song anyway.
Totally. And it's, I mean, I think if you're asking them what that first impression is, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's how easily these parts fit together and yet how, like, I don't know what the word is. I guess casual is the word, right? It does have that kind of casual, like strewn together quality, but it's kind of refreshing. Like I find the movement from that A minor into the kind of more major, like that it's like really soaring and open.
Oh, and soaring is a perfect, but yeah, when it transitions, because it starts with that A minor and then it hits that F and then just bata, bata, boom. And
what is that chord? When it hits that next?
The next chord, I believe it's a C. Let me just... I'm just going to sing it to myself.
Right.
Yeah, no, so it's a C. So it's F, C, and then a B flat, which kind of establishes, like, okay, we are officially in the scale of F. But it's, I mean, just starting with an A minor, that's the minor third of this scale. Not too many people do that. Typically, in a song, you're going to know what scale you're in based off of the first chord.
Right.
That's what I like about this, is it's like, okay, we're going to start with the minor third and then bring it into the actual scale.
Yeah. I think not knowing anything else really about the Moody Blues, like they're a band that I have heard of. And like, it's like the band that like my bands that I've heard are influenced by. Right. And bands that like other bands I've listened to have been contemporaries of. Like the closest I've probably gotten to this is like Nico and the Velvet Underground. Right.
Yeah.
Like very similar. I can think of like, how would you compare that? Is it about the.
That's not terrible. I mean, I consider them kind of like unsung heroes of the British invasion.
Yeah.
And to be fair, honestly, as much as I love this album and this song and a few other songs by them, I kind of find them to be pseudo hippies. Like, I feel like they just kind of, they attach their horses to this
Kind of like a co-option, right? Yeah. Like, I can see that. It's, I mean, I'm very interested. Kind of funny enough, from like when we were talking about the Beatles, like the 60s overall, and like, I've like done more diving back into like Bob Dylan and stuff. Like that era in music is so kind of crazy because it is about like counter or revolutionary stuff and like pushing boundaries. And yet it also, like, there's a lot of like traditional qualities to this songwriting that I hear that it's kind of a weird reconciliation, but I like it. Like I kept reading, like before I listened to the song, I was reading like Moody Blues, like kind of proto progressive rock and that. And I'm not
Interesting. Yeah.
sure, do they earn it on this, you think, or is it in other tracks where they're,
It
I don't know.
depends. On this album, I think the progressiveness of it is the fact that this album is absolutely a concept album. It's supposed to be, a general day, and that's why they have such obnoxious titles, as we broke down, But I mean, I can see how they. It's very inspired. It's very ambitious. So I can give it that. But I mean, if you listen later to a song like The Voice, you'll hear how it's just like, yeah, they're also a band that just kind of attaches itself to the time and finds a way to be relevant. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing in the way I'm kind of presenting this, but there's this part of me that's always felt like there are artists and there are students of artists. To where there are some times where I just think like, exactly what you're supposed to do to come across as an artist. In that, there's a fault. There's something that's a little inauthentic. Whereas an artist just does what they're doing. And it feels like I may be speaking out of turn. This is just purely my own opinion on it, but I've always gotten the impression from them that they're more of the students of artists.
I mean, it's hard, right? Because there's also that line between influence, like everyone has influences. It's, I mean, in literature, one of my favorite quotes is from Cormac McCarthy, and I'm gonna paraphrase it, obviously, but it's like, I think like the sad truth or the ugly truth is all books are made up of books. And it's the inescapable fact that everything is built on something and there is no truly original anything. And so that is a true, right? And like, even, I mean, like Dylan's a good example, right? Dylan's old stuff is new in like, I guess, the more kind of personal bent he gave to a lot of those traditionals, but it's also very blatantly just old traditional folk songs. Like
Sure, but he puts himself into it.
it, and maybe that's the division, right? It's what you are able to do with that influence. Does it feel newer because of something you're doing with it? And I mean, I don't know where I fall in that cap you're talking about. I don't know.
I don't like complimenting you, but I feel like you put you into your music.
And here's where it's just a Colton
Sorry.
Saylor compliment off. Why not? But I think this is actually part of what you're talking about. I think you and I can both point out for ourselves where we stopped becoming the kind of like where I, at least for me, where I stopped wanting to be these other people that I had heard and where I was like, okay, well, what does like a Colton Saylor song sound like? Right. And it took me, I honestly think, Good Luck With Your War, that record. That was me going, oh, these are closer to what I think. And it was like not all one sound, but it was like an approach that I took that I like.
Well, it was something I always admired about. Let's just continue this. Something I admired about you was
Oh, God.
you sung like you. It took me a long time to find my singing voice. I was always, because I felt like I had like a decent amount of range and a decent amount of like I can do impressions per se of other vocalists, that it took me a long time to finally just start singing like myself as opposed to trying to sound like somebody else and just creating horrible records. Like what was it? We had a song on what was it? The God is a Dinosaur album, to where I think somebody was like, "Well, what did you do to make your voice sound that high pitch?" I was like, "I sung high pitch," and they're like, "There's no way that's how you sound." I'm like, "No, that's exactly what I did. It's stupid, but
It's you telling saying that to them in the voice you have, which is so deep and bass. And to bring it back, I really do kind of appreciate that kind of development. And I don't know enough about this band to know what they've gone, what they went on to do after this. I know this is like 4 years into their band, yeah. Right? They started around the 64 and this is 68.
I believe it came out in 67, 68, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah. We're just talking about voice. So I'm curious, what is your take on the vocals?
I like it.
In the scheme of it, yeah.
Yeah, I like it because that's the part to where I feel it's him just singing as him. It's very easy. There are other songs on this album, or like the song Dawn is a Feeling. Mm-hmm. There's a moment there to where it hits this really like, do you understand that all over this land? And I'm just like, oh my God, that is British trope all the way. That is British 60s fucking... It's so silly, but I mean, that was a moment where I'm going, there's nothing original in this thought. For the song Tuesday Afternoon, there's really nothing in it that I feel is posing or not sincere or not a, there's nothing in it that feels like it's trying to do an impression.
I guess for me, what I was originally thrown off by mm-hmm. was It sounded way more kind of like ballad-esque, like the vocals themselves. I'm not talking about the melody or anything.
Okay.
Like, I think it's when they go into that, like the C, right? The da, da, da. Like, I think I was expecting something with a little more edge to it. It's very, I mean, I said soaring before. I mean, it's beautiful, right? And it's, I think initially that was the part of the song that I was a little thrown off by, because everything else feels so...
Are we talking about the bluesy part?
No, I'm talking about right before that.
Okay, so you're talking about, I'm just beginning to see. All right.
Exactly. I actually think when they go into that bluesy part with the piano, that's my favorite part.
It's
a
good resolve. That's what hooked me in. Yeah.
that is kind of what, like, not that I was enjoying it before, but no, wondering where they were going to go with that open part. It could have gone wrong, I think.
Absolutely. Well, and I love it does that little, like the little, like, like that's where it's like really tasteful chord selections to where I think it hits a, what is it, the, yeah, it hits the D, then the A flat, then the C, and then the A flat. A flat in this scale is a tough chord to make work, but that little vocal swing works. And yeah, just the coming out of the end, like doom, kum, bang, kum, bang, kum, bang, doom, kum, bang, kum, bang. Like, how do you, again, spring cleaning? Like, just how do you, that's perfect for folding laundry.
I
just
thought
really
this...
sad. That is what I associate this with. It just seems like perfect folding laundry music.
It's funny to me because I'm hearing, actually, I have to get a date on this first before I make this.
Mm-hmm.
The other band, yeah, I see this. The other band that I hear in this, and they're contemporaries, is especially when we get to that piano breakdown, mm-hmm. it's the Beach Boys.
I can see that.
And I think it's maybe they're the more, like I said, Velvet Underground before. I think Beach Boys to me actually, and I mean it as a compliment. I know we both have mentioned non-complimentary things about the Beach Boys, but it's
very true. Yeah.
I think in terms of like the instrumentation, I don't know. I think a lot of it's maybe like the Mellotron, and like there is kind of a cool like psychedelic and yet still very like traditional folksy edge to it. I can see it.
I can see it. Definitely kind of the Pet Sounds, Beach Boys.
Also, it just sounds like Good Vibrations. I'm picking up.
Very true. Very true. It does have that. Oh, and here's where the pretentiousness kind of kicks in for me. The strings. I love this album, but I mean, most of this album, I got to give a lot of credit to the London Festival Orchestra. You know, they enhance so much. The best part of this song is that big. That's like that segment. I'm like, it's so Disney-esque, but there's a little bit of. While I love the fact that the song's super loose, that orchestra isn't. That orchestra is tight. They're nailing their parts and enhancing so much of this to where I've played the song acoustically by myself plenty of times, and I think it sounds fine, but it's never going to sound as good as it can sound.
You almost need that, right? You need, if there's going to be a kind of looser, jangly feel to like an arrangement, you need something to be kind of picking up the slack. But it's weird that it's the orchestra. It's not like the rhythm section, but I think that's great. I need to re-listen again, because like I'm having like a weird amnesia about the drumming in this song.
That's probably with good reason. Go ahead. I'm pretty sure it's just like single kick snare. Single kick snare. There aren't bells and whistles on that drum set.
Yeah. It's, I mean, what I would say is that the bass line is cool.
It reminds me of spring. It just feels like, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like everything's blooming all of a sudden.
And it's way more. I mean, I kind of take back what I said about the rhythm not picking up the slack. The bass does. Mm-hmm. I think it's the drums are funny because like when he's coming in, I was expecting to be a flam. Right, which I don't think there's a lot of flams in. I know I've explained it before for listeners, but if you're unfamiliar, flams where you have the two drums hit the snare, but at different times, and it gives it the kind of nice full sound.
Yeah,
my colleague has done a great intimidation or imitation of his. Let's just do flam sounds, but it's not a flam, right? He's actually going to the hats, like it's like an open hat, like
yeah.
Which is
very Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I mean, to be honest, it's a very kind of modern way to do it. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. It feels almost slightly off. So when it like goes in, it's like a weird kind of abrupt thing, right?
Well, when you listen to it, and I've heard this in a lot of 60s albums, there's kind of like this slapback reverb that keeps it from being precise, but somehow it still works, which blows my mind because we have not been in that school of recording.
No,
if we did that on a recording in Default America, I'd go like, no, something's wrong. Whereas they just kind of roll with it.
Yeah, like you mentioned before, the looseness of it, it lends like even with the drums. And I feel like that's with a lot of like early like 60s, at least that I've heard. It's like we were talking about like a Rolling Stone too, and all of it. The drums are not this like predominant force in the mix or in the actual writing, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier today listening to it again, where it was something you brought up when we were talking about, you know, modern drum recording techniques compared to old. It's like, yeah, the drums are not pounding, they're not pulsing throughout the song, they're there, but they're not up front, they're bled within the song.
Yeah, which is very different, by the way, from like jazz recordings from the era, because
you're right, absolutely.
I think it's I think at the time it was because both kind of knew what the roles were, right? Mm-hmm. Rock drummers in the 60s were not doing what jazz drummers in the 60s were doing.
Almost all of them, like playing drums in the 60s, easy gig.
I got it.
Not always, but that was a little too dismissive. But if you wanted to, it could be a very easy gig.
I think my thing about like people talking about like classic rock drummers, and I think we're kind of picking on the 60s, maybe for a good reason, right?
Why not?
That's really it. 50s too. It's people going, oh, but you know, insert drummer from a 60s rock band. Oh, but they were amazing. Their chops were great. And I'm like, yeah. And then I listen to like any one song and it's just like it's like low, and it's, I get it, right? There's a difference and there's a quality to learning to drum to the song and fill what role needs to be filled. But it's just comical, that contrast.
Oh, yeah. No, I still have the debate with my bandmate. I shouldn't say there's a debate because I do respect Ringo Starr, but he's like, Ringo Starr is so much better a drummer than people give him credit for. I'm like, no, I think he gets the credit he deserves.
He gets the exact amount of credit he deserves.
Like, don't get me wrong. Early Beatles, I'm like, he does some stuff that, yeah, that's not as simple as some people might take it, but it is a little more rooted in simplicity.
And I think there's a difference, too, between being a good drum player, like a good drummer, and being a good drummer in a band. And I think that's where, and they're very different. Like, I'm looking right now. I was thinking about jazz drumming, and a guy that I've gotten more into recently is Tony Williams, who was the younger player who, once Miles Davis like kind of switched up his quartet that he had, and it's right now the name of his original drummer is escaping me, but he was amazing. But Tony Williams became this kind of next drummer, and he was like a child when he started to drum for him. He was in his teenage years. It's insane. That guy's so freaking good. And he did a lot of cool 60s stuff with Miles Davis. And then like in the 70s, he was doing like progressive rock, like pure drumming albums. And it's the thing too, where this question of like what goes up or down in the mix and like what gets highlighted. It's interesting to see the two start to converge. Like the more like rock fusion, like jazz fusion I see in the 70s, like you get more like by the 80s, it's what we're talking about. It's that like really heavy kick. Not
very
bad
pronounced thing. Drums.
Very pronounced. Yeah. And I mean, at this point, I think it's just getting ridiculous.
it is genre specific. I think you nailed it, because like, I think John Bonham is an extraordinary drummer. I would still probably take, I always get his name wrong, it's either Buddy Guy or Buddy Rich. Buddy Rich, thank you. I think he's a better drummer. You know, and he's what, two decades before, something like that. He's when people talk about like, oh, it's a these old school drummers or these old school basketball players, they're not that good. I'm going like, no, there's Buddy Rich and freaking Wilt Chamberlain are great at what they're doing. I don't give a shit if they were from an era where you think it's not as discovered the abilities that you can do.
A similar conversation that you and I have had with like guitarists too, where I mean, funny enough, like just to say all the instruments in this track, I don't think any one of them is doing something like insane, right? No. Like I think the guitar picking is probably, to me at least, the most, I mean, calling it the most complex feels silly because it's not.
No, it's perfect you say that, because the part that really stands out to me is coming out of the second verse when it hits again that like doom doom bang doom bang doom bang. All of a sudden, the strumming on the guitar gets a little more heavy-handed, and that's something that I went like, that's a cool dynamic. That's and it's what you said. It's not complicated, but you got to have enough sensibility to make that work, and just. All of a sudden, the strumming gets a little more erratic, you know, and it just adds this little essence to it, especially because we're not going to get the I'm looking at myself reflections of my mind. We're not getting that. So what do we do to make this part a little more intriguing? Like, all right, I know what to do. Heavy handed right wrist. And I'm going to really strum through these strings.
It's weird. Not weird. I don't know why I'm saying weird.
It's wild. I think you want to say it's wild.
It's wild. Yeah. If anyone's been paying attention to these like song spotlight episodes that we've done, probably the biggest like pattern, the biggest repeating thing is it's never about the instruments doing anything insane or spectacular as much as it is about how these things piece together.
Yeah.
And I think there seems to always be something that's like the glue, right? That kind of chains things together. And I think it's the Mellotron, right?
Yeah, it's got to be the Mellotron.
The Mellotron is great. I love it. And I'm such a recent convert to the Mellotron. Like, there's a lot of Mellotron on my upcoming record that I'm like, yeah, man, this is great. And I instantly heard it and I was like, I love that.
I'm looking forward to your next alter ego, the Mellicoltron.
Oh, don't even get me started, man.
I did.
Oh man, that is great. Listen to That Thing Blow is like incredible.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I dig all the strings. What do you think? What do you get from the lyrics?
I was avoiding talking about the lyrics.
I know it's
because
it's so. I'll say this much on a positive end for it. It does have like a cool reflectiveness to it and a vagueness to where you can kind of interpret it how you will. Mm-hmm. Like I do enjoy that kind of element to it, to where it seems like there's a little bit of discovering ease. I like the way you said yeah right there. But I do think that this kind of fits into a theme we've been kind of following with our song spotlights. It's a really good anxiety song.
It seems, I mean,
I know what lyric you're looking at. I think I know what lyric.
I'm just afraid because I love you so much. I'm afraid if I say the things I want to say, you're never going to love me again.
It's fine because there's a lyric in this song that can only exist in the 60s peace love movement.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. Do we want to say it at the same time?
I'll try my best to remember.
So just the main part, not the beginning. Yeah, through the fairyland of love.
The fairyland of love.
The fairyland of love, man.
Literally, it's only him and it's only a band like this or, you know, like some like sexy R&B. I'm going to take you through the fairyland of love.
I don't think anyone would do that, Rob. I love you, man.
I'm ready to do it. Did you just hear how that sounded? That sounded good.
I can hear you saying it. Yeah. And I
let me do it one more time. No, but that it's a horrible lyric, but it does work because they're so involved with that hippie peace and love movement, man.
I'll say this about the lyrics. They're not good to me, but yeah. It's also, like you mentioned, good in that they're not artfully done. Like we've mentioned before that the kind of like a criteria that we both have for lyric writing is where you like, it feels like all of a piece. It feels easy. Right. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's a kind of like, you don't see the effort to piece these things together. Yeah. I do think that there are moments of that where it does feel like there's this kind of natural flow. Like to me, when I see this, I just see like a kid tripping on mushrooms in a park.
I believe the description he gave for writing this song was I was in the park with a joint in my hand.
Yeah. And so in that way, I'm like, this sounds like what a dude smoking a joint in a park would think. Like there's something like kicking the song's lyrics feels really cruel because someone like just buzzing or tripping in a park who is like just talking about how beautiful things are around them. Like that seems to be what he wants to capture in the song. And given the time, given all that, it's great. Do I think it is like the craftsmanship of it is great? No, and I don't know about a lot of other Moody's blues. Is this par for the course for you, Rob? Lyric writing?
It is par for the course. Yeah, I think that they're one of those, or I'll just say Justin Hayward. He strikes me as a little more of a no nonsense lyricist. I've worked with people in the same mindset to where there's not going to be some elaborate way of getting the point across. It's going to just get the point across. Or I shouldn't even say the point. It's just going to get the words out. You know, when he says that I'm looking at myself, reflections of my mind, a lot of people can get way more hung up on whether or not those are the right lyrics.
Yeah.
Right there. He just kind of, yeah, that's fine. You can find different ways to make that a little more articulate, but it seemed like, yeah, that's getting an idea across.
And that's not like, to me, the problem area at all. Like, I think there are like, it's actually some of that's like kind of weirdly modern to me, right? Like exactly that. It's the more mystical that it gets deeper in. That's like the trees in the park.
Trees are drawing me near. I got to find out why.
And yet with that's where it's like open. Like, the trees are drawing.
Yeah. Right. Vocal melody is just fucking smooth. Let's go.
I mean, we've said this before. The melody saves it. And it's not a melody I would ever write. It's also weird. It's like that's very 60s to me. Like I can't even explain to you why that melody is so 60s. Other than it's like not quite major. Like there's something about that's like atonal to me. And yet it's so like dramatic.
Yeah.
In how it's set up.
I think it's the holding out of that note leaves opportunity for the rest of the music. I you're right. I don't know why it's so 60s to you.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I don't think the lyrics are bad. It's just there's so lazy and pedestrian, which is fitting to the lyrics that are in this song. They're not good. It's like they're not bad, they're not good, they're there.
I want to criticize it further, but I just still hear you talking, saying like your story when you were little and listening to it and just being like, I can't kick around this beautiful song.
Don't worry about 5-year-old me, he turned into quite a prick.
Damn.
You can say what you think about this, Colton. I'm perfectly fine.
I'm gonna tell you why I'm laughing so much.
I know. I'm like, that really got a.
I can't.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, everybody. I think that's great. Here's the thing.
Why did you laugh that hard? No,
I can't tell you. I can't tell you.
Can you tell me off air?
I could tell you in segment three. Okay, I can tell everybody in segment three.
Okay, all right. Okay. So you're holding out. That's fine.
Yeah, but I feel like I started being really complimentary to the song, and then we've gotten further. We've nitpicked. I really liked it, and I think it's also talking about like sort of older form of songwriting. I love that it's these more or less like three parts strung together. One like part three, or I should say like the first time through, and then it just comes in again. There's no real bridge to.
Yeah. No, none at all. I mean, unless you want to assign the string ending.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's in that way. Anytime I hear a structure like that, like, it's that unique to me. I'm so compelled by it. So I really enjoyed it.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. But it was just because you chose Bruce Coburn. Like, because our first two choices were like, let's go with classics.
Yeah.
And then you go Bruce Coburn, where I'm like, this is out of left field. Where I'm like, he's
a Canadian classic. Everybody, come on.
I mean, you can make an argument that Coburn and Moody Blues are classics, but they're not quite.
We're I think
gonna
doing
get,
the Beatles
we're not gonna
and
get
Bob
a whole
Dylan.
Bunch of listeners. There's not going to be a whole bunch of people going, oh, Moody Blues, can't wait.
Oh, Bruce Coburn. What did he say his name was? Bruce what? Well, I don't care. This was a lot of fun. I want to make sure we're covering all the bases here. Are there any other Tuesday afternoon
takes? We will leave ourselves an opportunity in the next segment.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good to me. But I feel like we covered a lot here. I maybe on the other side of this break, I want to talk to you more about like Moody Blues recommendations, because maybe for people who haven't heard it, I know for me too, I want to know where else to start with this discography wise, but we'll let you think about that. Yes. While our Blamley takes us to it.
That's right. Everybody check out Chit Show. No, I'm just kidding.
In
check
protest.
Untitled mixtape. Let's do it.
And Chit Show. Come back. Okay.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Danko, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
All right, here we go, everybody. Third and final segment. Ratings.
And you have to guess now.
Yeah, I know. I've been getting more nervous about this. When we first started the podcast, it was a lot easier. And it's like, okay, we're going to do some obvious band choices and artist choices. Now we're starting to get into that. I don't friggin' know. Like, you're going to throw something out of nowhere to me, just like I did with Tuesday Afternoon.
I'm not going to do that, but I will. Well, let's rate Tuesday Afternoon first. Let's give the Moody Blues their time, and then I'll explain what just happened in segment two.
Okay.
So we're rating this out of 100. Mm-hmm. We have already done this several times. I have a specific form of amnesia where anything that we talk about on this show, once the recording is done, I forget immediately.
Sounds wonderful. And unfortunately, I have to edit the episode, so I get reminded of what we did.
Over and over.
Yeah, we're a bunch of doofuses.
You
I
can
think we
help.
nailed it.
You can help me because I do think we've been trying to stay a bit more on track with these single song ratings than we have with our discographies. What has been our highest rating? I think the Beatles and Dylan were both in the 80s,
I
if
think it
I'm not
was
mistaken.
85. I think
Okay.
85. I don't think we've punctured 90 yet.
I was gonna say, and
I don't think we are.
I'm gonna say, yeah, likely not. But that's where I'm guessing. And I'm thinking I gave Coburn probably around the 70s.
Yeah, I think we were somewhere in the 70s. I'm not exactly sure, but I want to say I probably gave it like a 75.
It sounds, I mean, it sounds, and again, listeners who were like, no, both of you didn't, but we're doing our best here.
Yeah,
And
just.
is this readily available information that we could check even now? Yes, but here we
It's
are.
readily available, but it would take
Maybe readily is a strange word there. Yeah, not quite readily.
it's
It's available.
available. It's available. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm doing a lot of pomp and circumstance to try to figure out where I am here. I'm going to give this a solid 70.
You know, honestly, me too. If I want to add nostalgia into this, of course it's going to raise, you know, but I think it would only raise it to like an 80. I think there's a reason that it is my first favorite song when I was five, and probably 3 years later, it was no longer my favorite song. You know, it's not like it took forever. It's just this is the first song I remember being infatuated with. I'm like, I need to keep, like, play it again. Mom,
Yeah.
dad, play it again. Play it again. I love that part. When you were saying earlier to her, it's like, I don't want to, like, you know, spit on your. I don't think you use those words,
No.
but I'm going like it's not that big a deal, buddy. And it's like a lot of people, their first favorite song is, I don't know, I love you, you love me. You know, I'm just, I feel fortunate that my first favorite song is not from a kid's television show.
I think it's funny, you saying this now, I'm trying to think of what was my first. I don't know if I could give it clearly, but I do know that U2's All I Want Is You,
Okay.
that's one that sticks in my brain. And it's funny, it's similar, right? It's like the things that you just kind of latch to, it's melody, I think, for me a lot too. It's like the stuff that you really like, the feeling of the atmosphere. What I think is so great about you loving this song, Tuesday Afternoon, is how I haven't used this word yet to describe it, but it's haunting too. I think it's partly in the Mellotron. It's such a weird song in that it doesn't, to me, have a kind of set emotional register to it. It's so kind of disjointed, and yet that's what makes it so fascinating to me. It's just as an artifact of songwriting in the 60s, I love it. And
Yeah. It's very unique. It's hard to really compare it to other songs
right.
from that time frame.
That's very true. And I think the closest I
Even
got
though
was
we did.
Beach. Well, the
Yeah.
closest I got was Beach Boys, but even then, not by much, right? And I think structurally, why it's a 70 for me and not like any lower or higher, I think why it's in that range is some of the things we've already talked about, like lyrics and that. But I do think it is that high, not even just because of the instrumentation, it's the arrangement and it's the structure. It's weird, it's disjointed, and yet they've found a way to make it, because of that, so like dynamic, and that's cool.
And it's cool that it was a single, you know, and it was a successful single. It
Yeah.
didn't get him a Grammy, but you know.
I mean, what does nowadays?
I'm
I think
sorry,
basically,
guys.
right? So we're both at 70. Have
Yeah,
we ever both had the same rating? I don't think we've ever had the same rating before.
I think
This is a big deal.
I think I forced you again. Here's that amnesia. We have. I
Okay.
think I forced you into on Let It Be. I think I forced you to 85, and I think we both agreed with Like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah, that tracks. That tracks to me. I appreciate you, man. I'm so glad that we got to do this song.
Yeah.
Are we ready now for next song?
Yeah, I
Guessing.
think we've gotten
So,
everything we want out of the way for Tuesday afternoon. I'm glad that I was really nervous. My last thing on I was really nervous you were gonna come back like, what is this song? Because you're right, it is so like unorthodox. And I was like, I don't know how Colton's gonna fucking
but
even approach.
I was in. So I did want to ask you this. That's right. That was from the previous segment. What is your, like, let's talk albums
Yeah, you're right.
specifically.
You're right. Okay.
What is the, like, the blues album, Moody's Blues album, for people to get into? And that's always a hard question, right? Because I'm not saying necessarily the best. It's not always the best, right? But if you think someone is interested in this record or this band, what's the record to start with?
For me, it would be Days of Future Past.
Okay.
Because, again, this was just a song I fell in love with as a kid. I did not fall in love with the Moody Blues.
Yeah.
You know, like, they got usurped very quick. I had already heard the Beatles and Zeppelin before this, but that song was great. But the more I started listening to other artists, I mean, I'm probably a bigger Backstreet Boys fan than I
I just be clear, we're talking about young Rob, everybody. We're not talking about
you're right.
38-year-old Rob.
All right, well, let's go 38-year-old. I'm a bigger Boys to Men fan than I am of Moody Blues, and I'm not joking.
No, I mean, I'm not either. That's Van Philly all the way. Boys to Men.
Motown Philly? I'm in.
Motown Philly, come on.
Even though that would be like, that doesn't even crack my top 10.
So Days of Future Past is the recommendation. Yeah.
Okay. But I do love the song, The Voice. I maybe one of these days I'll choose The Voice, because I'd be intrigued to see what your opinion would be on that.
I mean, we can always do an abbreviated Moody Blues discography. I'm down for that.
I'll see you in the hundreds.
I had this thought today. I was washing my hands. I don't know why I have to clarify. I was washing my hands. I do wash my hands,
good.
Everybody.
I'm so happy.
But yeah, guys. And everyone, please wash your hands. Yes. But I thought, you know, by the end of however long this podcast goes, our musical literacy is going to be so much higher. I don't know if we're going to be better people by the end of this, but I feel like already it's cool to just kind of have a working knowledge of, not even just like, oh yeah, I've heard this band's song this one time, but it's like, you know, getting to actually look at evolutions in that. It's a cool process.
Yeah, it is. I do have to apologize. When I was editing the Phoebe Bridgers episode, I was like, God, I got so many things wrong. Now, to be fair, I was having a little bit of pressure in my head. And by the way, Phoebe, if you disagree with anything I said about you, even though I feel like I had good things to say,
I think we both had pretty complimentary things to say.
But if any of them, Connor,
Lucy,
I can't remember, Lucy, thank
Julian,
you. Julian,
they're not going to be happy with you forgetting their names.
Yeah, that's fine. But you know what? Honestly, I got tortured the days following that because my tooth did not stop aching, and I had to go see the
achy tooth.
Yeah, it was very achy. I had to see the dentist, and it hurt for days after that. So I had a week of tooth pain to punish me for whatever I may have said.
Good Lord.
Hurtful. Okay. Cool. What a diatribe. Go ahead.
So here's what happened. I told you I was going to play this game where I was going to drop song
you
lyrics.
Did you?
So here's the thing. Halfway through our Moody Blues deep dive in segment two, halfway through, I had a thought of, oh, shit, I had not been doing that. And so literally, if you saw me scanning over to my right, what you saw was me looking at this lyric sheet and frantically going, okay, how can I drop this? And when you go to edit this, my guy, my baby guy, you're
going
to hear like 7 or 8 different lyric references in a row and in ways that I saw to be highly irregular and weird. And what I'm laughing at is as I'm doing it, you're just like, well, yeah, exactly. And like repeating what I said as if it was normal speech. And I'm thinking, I'm so
insane. Embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed. All right. I completely forgot.
You didn't miss any of
this is like, what is it? The concussion protocols, where it's like, I'm going to tell you 3 words. And then at the end of this conversation, I'm going to ask you what those 3 words were.
Well, allow me to break the silence.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay. That's an interesting hint, I believe. Yeah. Are we doing Stained?
No, I did make a Stained reference to my class and nobody got it because I said something about breaking
the
cycle.
Silence.
That's
breaking the cycle. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you can never break this thing. That's called? True.
Hold on. I got to gather myself for a second here.
I'm trying to keep us together here, okay?
See, I like you have post
I'm episode. Trying to keep us together.
Keep us together. Okay. Freaking, what are we doing? Level keep us together,
this,
but...
Can I, everybody, this is the only way I'm going to give clues to Rob from here on out. This is too much fun.
This is horrible.
Do you love me now?
Shit, dude. You know what?
I'm trying to be clear. If you don't love me now, I don't know if you will again.
See, I should know it. You're right. I am absolutely going to my phone, everybody. I'm embarrassed. Colton has me so frazzled right
Can
now.
Real quick, let's take his break. We have wanted to cover this song, and then we didn't. But you came into practice one day very excited about covering this song. This was supposed to be a My Friend Sam cover. We're going to play it at live shows. We actually never played it. I don't know what happened.
I can't wait to edit this episode because you said you have post-episode amnesia. I have during-episode amnesia. So we are doing The Chain, huh?
Yeah, man.
That's a good choice. That's going to be an interesting one to break down.
By
Fleetwood Mac, everybody.
Yeah, Chain by Fleetwood Mac. And I want to just kind of quickly... I came to this, honestly, because while grading, I was going through a couple of different records, and not including Rage Against the Machine, by the way. I'm in big trouble. But we'll be fine. We'll be fine. I came back to Rumors, and I just had this thought of, my God, Rumors has every good song from that era in one album.
It's funny you say from that era. I was thinking from Fleetwood Mac.
That too. But good Lord, that's a good record.
It is a very good record. I have to have this debate all the fucking time.
Oh, is there a certain someone in your life who doesn't like Rumors?
There might be a Voldemort.
Well, he better not listen to the next that Chain episode.
I promise he won't.
I'll have superlatives. Well, yeah, we are going to discuss in our next song spotlight The Chain, but that is not our next episode.
It's not.
No. It is Rage Against the Machine. How was your Rage Against the Machine deep dive?
So far the same as yours. it's cool. We're going to inject some, I don't want to say testosterone. We're going to inject some oomph into this. I guarantee you guys, I'm apologizing now. Colton and I are going to do a lot of like, bam, 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 bam. We keep going back to that one. Yeah.
Well, here's
in the name of,
here's an early confession. Most songs of Rage Against the Machine that I'm like, oh yeah, this song, I think more than 5 seconds and go, no, that's just Killing in the Name of. That's like
we will discuss this much further, but they have a formula that they very much so stick to, at least throughout their singles.
Very true. Well, I'm very excited for it, man. And
me too.
I really had a lot of fun talking to you about Moody Blues, and I had not as much fun, but still a lot of laughter trying to throw out the Chain lyrics. And you will hear them while you're editing, and I apologize in advance.
That's hilarious. When you were saying, don't, like, if you don't love me now, I'm like, I kept going back to, what is it, the...
if you don't know me by now. Or something.
That was one, but there was another hint you said, again, in episode amnesia. But there was something you said to her, all I was thinking, love will keep us together.
Oh, that would be kind of nice. The worst one was, I said something about the, like, oh, I'm afraid you're never going to love me again. Like, somewhere around, like, there's a, we don't have to rehash it, everyone. But
yeah, that's something you say regularly to me.
Yeah, that's very true. And it did make me think, you know what? Very conversational, The Chain. So everybody, have a good 2 weeks. We'll come back with Rage Against the Machine. We are strong. We are young. We are... I don't know what's happening.
Oh, that would be such a good song to do, too.
We are proud. We go well.
Love we is a are... battlefield.
Oh, I literally was thinking of... We're all right. We have to go, everybody. Goodbye. Don't record
love
on a Saturday.
A Batterfield. Yeah, this is horrible. Happy Saturday.
Bye. Goodbye.